Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Welcome to another episode of Stargazing, a Dallas Stars podcast. You don't recognize this voice much. This is Mark. Our genial host, Wes, was a game-time decision and couldn't make it. So fortunately for us, fresh off the injured reserve list, we have Tyler with us tonight. How you doing, Tyler?
I'm doing good, Mark. How about you?
I'm doing great. I actually went to two hockey games, and they were Dallas Stars hockey games this week. So I'm feeling great. We got 4 points out of it, and then we never get points when I watch them live.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. It's kind of a little bit of deja vu, just a pair of 3-2 wins, both of them seeing us edge back over the Golden Knights in the official standings, not taking into account points percentage.
So did you watch the games?
I did. I actually recapped them, which I didn't realize when I signed up that I did two back-to-back.
So how did the energy level seem at Honda Center?
There's people there.
Yeah, there were even a handful of Ducks fans there. So fortunately, a decent amount of Victory Green there to cheer at the end of both games. But it's been a while since we've had one of these things. So a bit to recap here. Stars are still sneaking right in there, currently in the playoff spot. Probably by tomorrow, they might be out of a playoff spot. Who knows? It's a struggle all the way through. But as of now, we're looking pretty good. We made some moves at the trade deadline, though. What do you think about Namestnikov and Wedgwood so far?
I have gone ahead and I've ordered my Namestnikov jersey, and I'm going to be wearing it at every single game for the next 10 years. So as far as Namestnikov goes specifically, that to me, the issue I take with that is I just don't see the point for move us beyond the idea of whether Dallas should have been buying in the first place, or if they should have been staying pat or even, you know, selling. I think the fact is they acquired a player who brings no offensive value, which is what this team needs. He's basically just a bottom six forward. And what he's essentially doing is you could think of it as, oh, we're acquiring him, you know, depth is always important. You know, every time you bring in someone to the trade deadline, there's then the expectation like, okay, now we got to play this guy because, you know, we just gave this up for him to trade. And so that kind of like forces him into the lineup. And as we've seen with, you know, several players, you know, for Peterson, Astuchnik, now most recently and infamously Gurianov, basically it's just putting out players who probably should be in the lineup are now getting forced out for a player who, at least so far in Victor Green, you know, doesn't seem to be bringing anything to the table.
Right. And he seems to be stapled to Tyler Seguin. And whether that's related or not, the Seguin line seems to be the one of the four lines that is struggling at this point. And, you know, it's only been a handful of games, so you can't really say that this is a definite trend. But we want to get Tyler Seguin going, and they've been the one line that just hasn't been productive at all. And that's, you know, whether they have Gurianov with them or not. And speaking of Gurianov, you know, he did watch the game here from the press box. And what in your mind does Dallas need to do to get the most that they can out of Gurianov?
Yeah, I think Saad Youssef, he had a really good article today that talked about the situation, Gurianov, and then just kind of bonuses for line thinking in general, because the way it's kind of going right now is you're talking about, you know, Namestnikov and partnering with, you know, Seguin, that's line struggling. It's like, okay, he we have the top trio of Heinz, Robertson, Pavelski. That's not going anywhere. Then you have Fox's line, where he seems to be, Bonus seems to be pretty set on, you know, keeping that together. So at the end of the day, you really just have, you know, the middle, you have like kind of middle six or second, fourth line, however you want to look at it, but you basically have only six spots to actually tinker with and move people in and out and trying different partnerships. So, you know, usually when it comes to Gurianov, it's like, oh, well, you need to play him with, you know, some better partners, you need to do this. That's kind of being restricted here by just sort of what Bonus's philosophy is coming at. I think what you really need to do if you're Dallas is, if you're trying to make the most out of Gurianov, you just have to get him into positions where he's more comfortable. You know, Saad mentioned that his normal spot in the power play, where he's seen success in the past, you know, they've been moving him around and haven't been playing him there. You know, they're trying to, you know, with the deployment, well, you know, one of the greatest things that Gurianov can do is, you know, with the entry and going down the wing and utilizing his speed and puck possession. And obviously Dallas is a, you know, dump and chase team, and so you're losing out of that whole transition he brings. So if the Stars really want to try and get the most out of this player who has proven to be productive in the past, and, you know, tends to go hot and cold, they really just have to play a bit more to his strengths and make him feel more comfortable. And they just aren't doing that. You know, when he struggles, it's okay. Oh, you're struggling. You know, we're going to cut down your ice time, or we're going to scratch you, and it's your fault. You know, they're not really helping him out as far as the X's and O's are concerned in their deployment of him.
Right. And I think you start taking a look at trios, and I know that they tried Gurianov and Sagan and Peterson on the other wing. And Peterson can bring some of that creativity and IQ to that line, but they just got caved in defensively. And I think then there's an overreaction that says, you know, we just can't stick with this because it's going to give up goals. And unless you see immediate offensive results to offset that, it's just not going to work, at least in the environment that the Dallas Stars play in. And so then all of a sudden you're talking about a guy who's just the odd man out in how the lines get formed. And so you have, you know, Jamie Benn's playing the other center position, and he seems to be comfortable with Alexander Radulov. And then Peterson has kind of found a spot on that other wing. And so then you're really just talking about two positions, because you know Sagan's going to be in the middle, and it's like, who's going to work well with Sagan? And we have four guys to pick from. We have Gurianov, we have Nemesnikov, we have Kiviranta, and we have Studenich. And so how do you mix and match those guys to be a successful line?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it is kind of interesting, because you get those, you know, when you're trying to find those line combinations, and then you're seeing, okay, this player is playing well with so-and-so, and then, you know, when you're already limiting yourself to, you know, basically two lines to tinker with, if then you get in that mindset of, oh, well, you have to play these two players together, or, oh, this player has to be in this position, it's just very limiting it. And that's, I think, why we're seeing this rotation of, you know, in the past, you know, since the trade deadline, since acquiring Nemesnikov, you're seeing kind of like a rotation of someone who's coming out, and it's like this certain group, and then, okay, a new person's coming in, and then it's just kind of putting a mini blender to it. You know, one of the things I saw, and I think it was Tiffin that put this out there, but, you know, you could try something like, instead of Peterson, Gurianov, and Sagan, you could try Peterson, Gurianov, and Ben, and you could have Ben, who brings a bit more of a physical, more of a kind of, you know, stronger defensive presence to that line, to, you know, still be able to produce offensively and still be able to help in on that regard, but also bring it just a bit more stability to where they are, you know. And then I think you also have to just get to a point where you have to figure out, when it comes to Graham specifically, it's like, okay, are we going to play him, you know, he's an offensive guy, he's not great defensively, so we're just going to, you know, deploy him very generously in the offensive zone and not have to rely on him defensively? Or do we want to try and, you know, improve upon his defensive game so that when, you know, those situations happen, he's not as much of a liability in their eyes, because what it kind of seems based on, you know, Bonus's most recent quotes, it seems like, oh, well, if he's not producing, you know, he's a defensive liability, so we can't play him. Oh, and we're not going to make him not a defensive liability because he's an offensive guy. So it's like this weird situation where it's like, okay, if you have an off night, or if you have a cold streak, then, you know, that means you're going to get benched, or that means you're not living up to your bargain. And seem to be applied to Jaskurianov as compared to like other players, you know, who might be struggling or going on, you know, cold streaks like Radulov or others.
Right. And you know, Gurianov's had enough time here with the Stars where they kind of know what they're getting with him. And it seems that he doesn't get any of the slack that comes with that yet. And you know, I recognize, you know, yeah, you have to earn your spot. He was the top scorer on this team 2 years ago, but he was put in a position where he could succeed. But this team's developed since then, and because we have such a dominant top line that really is the offensive force of this team, it's left Gurianov searching for a home, and he hasn't found it. And I don't know, you know, I think Nemestikov was brought in because he could come in with Sagan and maybe give Sagan's line a little bit of that defensive prowess that you know, you were talking about, maybe switching it up and have Gurianov and Peterson play with Ben, and that gives them more of a defensive presence. And so maybe that was the thought with Nemestikov coming in on the wing, where if you had some defense there, you could afford to have some offense on the other wing. And you know, yeah, you roll the dice, and so far a couple games in, it just does not seem to be working. But it still leaves the team with a bit of a conundrum in that they have a line that they have some pretty high expectations for that is quite obviously a line that's not giving them what they think they should be getting out of it.
Right. It's they have very clear expectations for, you know, two of the lines, and in their minds, you know, both are producing. They view, you know, obviously the top trio is being successful. The, you know, Foxa line is obviously really well liked by the coaching staff, and they think they're doing a good job. And so I think that's where they're, you know, kind of the struggle is that they're wanting to see that same, you know, reliance on figuring out the middle six, and they just haven't found the right combination or, you know, strategy with those players. And what the answer is, I mean, who knows? Your guess is as good as mine. And it's just kind of a hope. It kind of wait and see and hope it kind of works itself out, that they're able to figure out that answer.
Yep. And the big part about it is that if you're going to be successful in the playoffs, I don't think you can afford to have a line that's not performing. And so here I'm going to make a leap of faith and think that the Stars have a pretty good shot of making the playoffs at this point. But if they have one line that's just not going to be ready to at least break even on the ice, that sets them up to be playing a really good team, and one line that really isn't cutting it. And I think that is the charge that Rick Bowness has, is to get that in place here over the next month, so that the team can go into the playoffs with a thought that they can roll with anybody.
Yeah, and that's probably the logic for getting Nemestikov, at least in Nil's eyes, is just, you know, we're going to probably be a playoff team. Let's get ourselves, you know, more options to try and, you know, get the whole forward lineup. And so even if it, you know, may cause some, you know, roster difficulties or some awkwardness, you know, let's try and get this as good of a team as we can be heading in.
Right. And you know, Bonus has a history with Nemestikov down in Tampa. And Nemestikov up through the age 25, 26 was one of these guys who was kind of projecting where the offense was getting better and the defense was getting better. And he had the potential of turning into a pretty good middle six forward. And he's gone through a little regression. And so it kind of fits this mold that we've seen where we kind of play as this Dallas Stars, where we assign people roles based on the player that they once were, as yep. opposed to the player that they are right now.
No, I think you're absolutely right on that. It's definitely a, there's probably definitely a Tampa Bay connection there that they kind of struck on with the acquisition. To move us on a little bit, so Mestikov was the one, was, you know, the trade deadline acquisition, I'd say. But the other one that they did leading up to that was Scott Wedgwood, who was brought in, basically acquired to help spell Ottinger, and has, despite that, has only played one game so far in Dallas. But it was a pretty good game against.
It was a pretty good game.
To understate things, it was all right.
But you know. We'll see what, because I'm sure he's going to be in one of the two games this on Saturday or Sunday. And I think I've heard some rumors that he's probably going to draw in at San Jose, so probably the Saturday game. And, you know, hey, he's probably so excited to have a defense in front of him that he's living the dream.
Yeah, it is really funny that, you know, heading into the season, you know, we had four goaltenders. Ottinger was on the outside. The current starter of the team, like undisputed starter, was on the outside looking in, starting the AHL. And Jim Nill is saying, like, you know, you can never have too many goaltenders. And everyone is just rolling their eyes, you know, four goaltenders, you know, maybe, you know, call it three if you're, you know, Bishop probably wasn't coming back. You know, that was probably going to be a long shot, you know, but it's still like, okay, you really need this many goaltenders. And then here they are heading into the trade deadline, trading for a goaltender because
they, you know, didn't have enough injured. Four was not enough, they needed five.
it's crazy. And it's like, and I really like the move, to be honest, even before his whole Carolina stand out, because, you know, I think what Nil realized, and we'll see, you know, how his deployment, how they actually use Wedgwood and how much they play him going forward as we head to the playoffs, but you know, it's the idea that at this point, not just because he's the Stars' really only goalie of note, but just because this team is, you know, been so reliant on goaltending this season due to their, you know, inability to score, it's pretty much the idea that, you know, if Ottinger goes down, you know, this team is tanked. This team is toast. So basically, even though you could continue to go forward, you could have just Ottinger, you know, play as much as possible, and then have, you know, Adam Scheel there as a backup as needed, you know, but the reason they got Wedgwood is to, you know, to be able to come in and to be able to spell Ottinger and basically keep him from overexerting himself. And, you know, obviously there's only one game so far that we've seen to take away from it, but I think you're right that Wedgwood is, you know, he's obviously not an all-star by any means, but, you know, with having a good defensive team in front of him, he has a very good position to be, you know, to do well with this team and to be a solid backup option so that the Stars aren't feeling like they have to play Ottinger or they lose the game. You know, they can say, okay, hey, we can trust to give Jake the night off.
Well, and I have a certain theory here with goaltenders, and you know, the Stars tend to run a pretty structured, structured back end. And so you get these goaltenders who are coming out of teams where their defense is just a dumpster fire and too much for them to handle, or, you know, and maybe they'll stand on their head every once in a while and get some wins, but they just lose. But you can kind of tell that they're decent goaltenders. And I think we got a little bit of rebound coming here with Wedgwood. And I think we saw the same thing with Khudobin and also Holtby. These are guys who were put in a position where they were just having to be better than they were. And especially a backup goaltender with the Stars, what you need to do is make the saves that you're supposed to make, and then every once in a while make one that's really great. But the structure should take care of you quite a bit, and it certainly does more than many other teams out.
I mean I agree wholeheartedly, especially, you said, like, we've seen this before with you know, Holtby was greatly struggling the previous two seasons between Vancouver and Washington, if not more. The, you know, Khudobin was doing well as a backup goaltender with Boston, but that's also another, you know, defensively minded team, and, you know, Dallas made him even look even better, you know, and so it's like, I do think that, you know, Wedgewood, he can be a very, you know, solid, serviceable backup for Dallas. And I think what I liked about this trade, even beyond what it means for right now for this season, is yes, Wedgewood is a he's a pending free agent. But, you know, he's a lot younger than Holtby or Khudobin. He doesn't have, like, the injury history. And then also, you know, when he comes to his contract this next year, I mean, he's probably going to be acquired wherever he signs. It's going to be as a backup goaltender or, you know, a goaltender for one of, you know, like Arizona, where we got him from. And he's going to come relatively cheap, you know. And, oh, by the way, we also have Ottinger, who's about to have a big pay raise. And so I think what I really like about this deal is you can acquire him, we can see him, we can test him out, and the Stars can see, okay, how does he fit in with our system as a goaltender? You know, is he doing well? Does he mesh well? Does he get along with everyone and stuff like that? So that then you can head into, you know, the off season, and you can say, you know what, you know, you did well with us, we liked you. You know, we feel comfortable making you our backup goaltender for the next, you know, 2 or 3 years, you know, behind Ottinger. And then boom, you know, for the first time in a while, the Stars, you know, crease is set, and we're not worrying about, you know, injury history or, you know, how someone might play or if they regress or will they be able to get back to form. You know, it'll just be kind of set. And on the flip side, if he doesn't do well, if that, you know, Carolina game was anomaly, then basically you say, okay, thanks for your help, but, you know, we're going to look elsewhere and try and figure out our backup sitting elsewhere. You know, it's kind of like a, you know, trial run.
Yeah.
You know, the 30-day free trial or almost free trial until you purchase your whole subscription.
Right, exactly. And the thing is, you know, this is a team that's going to need to save money where it can, because it has contracts that are coming up, and it's always run, you know, for the last decade, it's run pretty expensive in the net. And so here we're finally looking at a place where, you know, even if Ottinger signs a decent contract, it's probably not going to break the bank. But if you can bring in then somebody like Wedgewood, who is a solid number, you know, he's definitely going to be a number two. But you probably get him for 2 years for you know, 2.4, 2.5 million. And, you know, so annual cap that's for the 2 years. So you're probably talking about, you know, 1.2, 1.25, something like that for a cap hit. And that's the type of deal that you need to make in order to sign the contracts for the RFAs that we want to keep, and cross my fingers, somebody like John Klingberg.
Yeah, I mean, I have hope and expectation that, especially given how, you know, because with all RFAs, you know, there's that do well, you know, when it comes, whether it's Haskinen or it's Robertson or, you know, Ottinger, whoever, you know, they kind of fall into one or two categories typically. It's typically a long-term deal to lock them up, or it's a shorter, more reasonable bridge contract. You know, we saw that with Dallas with Heinz and Gurianov with taking the bridge deals, and then, you know, Haskinen with the full 8 years. And then there's more recently, there's been players across the league like Makar, Kaprizov, who've been taking, like, you know, 5 or 6 years, aiming right around when they are going to get their first UFA status. But so I have hope and confidence that what the Stars are probably going to do is, given how volatile goaltending is, we're probably looking at a shorter-term deal for Ottinger with a lower cap hit. And so I think if you can make out at the end of the season with or heading into next season, you know, Ottinger and Wedgewood combined could only be like a cap hit of, you know, say 5 or 6 million combined. And then if you're able to offload the last year of Khudobin's contract onto someone, or you're able to basically break that contract and just take eat the extra cap hit over the next 2 years, you know, you're looking at for the team a cap hit that's about equivalent to what you were paying, you know, Bishop alone, for right. for the last several years. And so suddenly you're essentially getting a free, you're opening up an entire roster spot worth of cap money to put to add to someone like, you know, Robertson or re-signing someone in free agency or something like that. So I think they're in a good position goaltending wise if, you know, Wedgewood works out and, you know, Stars are willing to re-sign him and he's willing to sign.
Yep. Yeah, I think so. And on the opposite side, I wouldn't be surprised if they try and do a long-term deal with Robertson. I think he's shown enough here in the last 2 years where we may want to turn that into an 8-year deal.
I'm certain that the Stars will push heavily for that and want to lock him up. They'll just be to see if Robertson's willing to play game. I imagine he'll be, I'm not expecting a bridge deal for him, like a short term. I'm thinking it's going to be, you know, 5+ years where, you know, Dallas is pushing for the 8 range and, you know, Robertson's camp is pushing to 5 and to try and take him to straight to UFA. And we'll probably settle somewhere like 6 or 7.
Robertson's kind of an interesting case because he's young enough where kind of like Miro, where he can sign a full 8-year deal and still come out where he's still in his prime. And so that's an interesting position to be in. So if he signs a long-term deal now, he can probably still be in a position when he comes out of that deal to be in a position where he could command another long-term big deal.
Absolutely. I mean, we're probably looking at, we're really looking far into the future, but you're right, because given his age and how he's doing, because he's only 22 years old, which right. is just crazy to think about. But, you know, let's say that he signs, you know, he'll be 23 end of the season. If he signs an 8-year deal, you know, that's putting him heading into free agency when at he's, 30. You know, 31.
Yeah.
Which means, you know, 31-year-olds will get 7-year deals in free agency, whether they should right. or not. So you're right. There's definitely from his camp, they could very easily take a strategy of saying, oh, hey, like, you're after this deal, you probably only have one long-term deal in you left anyways. You know, let's just go ahead and, you know, tell Dallas, sure, we'll sign the 8 years if you give us, you know, more money for each year. Because at the end of the day, you're going to have the same two big contracts. So might as well maximize them.
Yeah. Well, let's hit one more thing here before we wrap up. You know, we finally got Miro Heiskanen back on this road trip. And we somewhat survived without him. It was painful, but the team had a winning record. What are your thoughts about the Dallas defense, having seen them now without Heiskanen and with Heiskanen, and especially now that they seem to be an over 35 scoring force?
I think you're right. I think Dallas did a good job of weathering the storm, if you will, you know, going, I think it was like 6-5 over those 11. So it's like, you know, for a team, not the greatest, but for a team that was on the playoff bubble when Heiskanen went out, basically staying along the playoff bubble and then aided with, you know, Vegas imploding, you know, that's pretty much, you know, that was good. You know, just staying the course was pretty fine, just staying average and hovering the same thing. But
they were playing some good competition in those games too. Right. It could have been a disaster.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, I mean, heck, the road trip they're coming there to right now in the middle of, where it's like, you know, Anaheim and San Jose and Seattle. It's like, okay, those are, you know, towards the bottom end of the, you know, the league. You know, they're right. They're definitely, we're playing better competition. That all being said, seeing Heiskanen in these past two games is just kind of, it's sort of thing that the way he plays tends to, he goes, you know, unnoticed a lot because he's not, you know, a flashy player. You know, he's not a Cale Makar. He's not making the highlight reels left and right. But when you sit there and when you see, oh, Heiskanen's back finally, you know, let me focus on him when he's on the ice. And when you really take that time to watch what he's doing, and it's just, oh my goodness, like he is somehow the best player on the Stars and is yet still like underappreciated, undervalued, because, you know, just the little things he does that play off in big ways, you know, like, you know, last game against Anaheim for the overtime sequence. And, you know, yep. He basically you know, the whole overtime was basically Haskins like, okay, helps stop a shot, scoring opportunity going one way. He goes up the other and, you know, gets a shot on a 2-on-1. Then he breaks up another scoring opportunity and feeds it up to Ben, who's able to get the game winner. It's like, you know, that put on a good, you know, scope on everything, microscope on things of like that stuff that he's doing, you know, all the time, the little things, the stick work of poking the puck away that, you know, usually isn't amplified. It usually doesn't go noticed that well, you know, in typical 5-on-5 and throughout the course of a normal game.
Yep. Well, you know, as I was walking out of the game last night, my friendly Duck fans were telling me how this was all ruined because Terry decided to faceplant falling over the red line, and it cost him a 2-on-1 going the other way. And I said, you know, that you can think that all you want, but odds on, I'd say Haskinen catches up to that play and ends your 2-on-1. I mean, he's just that good of a skater.
Absolutely. I mean, it was kind of a, I mean, you see it all the time, and Haskinen has amazing stick work, you know, with his poke checks. He doesn't even need to catch up and, you know, dive or anything like that. He doesn't need to actually get in between them. All he needs to do is he needs to, with open ice, basically stride and accelerate. And he's a fast skater. He just needs to get to the point where he can just stick his stick out. And basically what would probably happen in that situation is, you know, the Stars on defender is sealing off the puck carrier. They try and pass it, and Haskinen could very well be there and poke it away like he did, you know, 10 seconds later.
Yep. Any comments on Klingberg during the time that Haskinen was out?
You know, Klingberg's had just a really weird season. Once that trade deadline passed, it felt really weird. It kind of was like a, you know, finally that status that, you know, was he going to get traded or not, that was looming over the entire season, kind of got lifted from his shoulders, and he was incredible for like 2 games, and then he kind of went back to like some struggling and some, okay, those are some boneheaded moves. You know, it's just, I think he's more or less been sort of the same he's been all season, where it's like, it's just kind of confusing to me. It's like, you know, what sort of happened here? Is it just, you know, unhappiness, or is it his deployment, or there's just something off, and I'm not sure what it is. And maybe it's just, you know, getting up there and, you know, hitting the wrong side of the prime. I mean, I'm not sure, but
I'm seeing something different with Klingberg. I think when Miro went down, he kind of saw himself back as the number one, and I think maybe he had a little adjustment period where he's been first pair guy for so long that when he kind of went second pair, it kind of hit his confidence a little bit.
Yeah.
And with Miro gone, you know, it's almost like you think that would cause a little more pressure on his game, but he kind of proved to himself, I think, at that point that, you know, it's not that he's getting worse and was a number two. He's just playing with a really good guy, and he still has it. And there's still, he's Klingberg. You know, there are going to be hiccups. They're more noticeable because he tries to do more incredible things. And so that's always going to be the case with somebody like John Klingberg. But you also see how important he is to that team and how he's the creative force that causes a lot of the offense to happen.
I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, like I said, I think he's been having a weird season as a whole, but, you know, but I think the positives there for me still outweigh whatever negatives. And to me, it's kind of weird. It's like, you know, he's probably played himself throughout the season. He's probably played his, you know, payday down a little bit. And to me, that kind of just makes you feel better about it. It's like, okay, maybe he's not going to have, you know, be able to command as much on the market or something like that. Maybe it'll be easier for Dallas to re-sign him. And then he'll be able to, you know, flip the switch again and be back to, you know, his top pairing self, because I think you're right that it's kind of weird that, you know, Dallas has, you know, a night when they're both playing well, Dallas has 2 number 1 defensemen. And it's kind of a weird thing that just because they have, you know, Haskinen's just Haskinen, you know, you really can't it's not a fair comparison for him for most players in the league, you know, and, you know, because Klingberg could go almost to any team in the league and he'd be, you know, their number one defenseman. And it just so happens that he's playing with someone who's better. And I think you're right. There's definitely that kind of dynamic that for both of them where it kind of affects it, you know, because just like how, you know, Klingberg isn't being asked to do all the handle certain situations or get as much ice time because Heiskanen is there. You know, the flip side is true. You know, Heiskanen isn't the top man on the power play unit. He's not asked to necessarily do the same offensive things as Klingberg, you know? So it's a kind of, it's a good problem to have. And it's definitely, you know, not something to be complaining about, but there definitely is a, you know, psychology and a deployment wrinkle in there that the Stars have been figuring out these past, you know, four seasons now.
Well, and the thing I wish they would figure out here is that running Klingberg and Thomas Hartley as a pair is just what they need to do. It's an investment in Hartley, and it probably keeps Klingberg in Dallas because, you know, yeah, John didn't get as much money as he could have out of the deal that he got. He's going to get paid one way or another. I mean, they're really talking about the difference of about $1 million a year. But Hartley and Klingberg have fun when they play together because they both have a similar type mindset. And I think they have a game that can grow together. And that's if anything happens the rest of the year, I hope that's what we see.
I mean, I'm all for it. I don't have my hopes up. but, you know, that's definitely, I think if you're trying to get the sign Klingberg long term, I think you definitely have to sell him on the idea of, you know, making the most out of his abilities and, you know, making sure that he's happy, you know, both off the ice, but on the ice as well, you know, because he's going to have all these teams that are telling them, you know, here's our plan for you. Here's why you should sign with us. And Dallas is going to have to do that as well. And, you know, they have to, and what they've done in the past is saying, oh, hey, you're going to be our top power play guy. And you're also going to play with this very defensive minded, you know, defenseman in Esa Lindell, who basically the way they probably pitch it is like, oh yeah, he's there to cover up all your mistakes and everything you do wrong. You know, that's not a pitch you can really give. It's just kind of like, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah. Your pitch here is you're going to play another guy who can move the puck. So it's not going to be completely on you. You guys are just going to be an offensive juggernaut that gets the defense involved in the Dallas Stars offense. And people aren't going to be able to key on you because you're going to have a dual threat with you.
Yep, absolutely.
Any final thoughts here before we head to the road?
So you think they're going to sweep the road trip with two more games left?
I'm a pessimist in some ways. I think maybe somebody has a weird game that kills them, but they're definitely going to win one of the next two, and I'll keep my fingers crossed and hope for two out of two.
Yeah, they definitely should win both in my mind, but I think it's going to be a, you know, one of those weird, like, you know, they're going to pick up a point or something like that. They're going to get the Stars have been really good in overtime this season, but it's going to be a weird one where it's either an overtime loss or, you know, kind of like it was looking like for Anaheim this last game. I'm thinking there's going to be one of those where it's just like the Stars should have won that, and it was just another, you know, late game collapse or just puck didn't bounce right. But as a whole, this road trip should turn out good for the Stars.
Yep. Well, pleasure having you on the podcast, Tyler. Don't be a stranger. Come on whenever you want. I think that's pretty much it. Thanks again, KT, for all that you do. Give us all the thumbs up and hearts and downloads that we can get out there. Otherwise, we'll talk to you next week.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. the I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake, let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at King's Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. King's Island is now open weekends.